My name is Patrick. I'm an alcoholic. Let me get this open. My sobriety date is December 25th, 2022. My home group is the Los Alamos group, Thursday night. And my sponsor is Al A, right over here. If you don't have a sponsor, I encourage you to get one. It's an honor and a privilege to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I first got here, I didn't really know. I'm already getting emotional. Oh, my God. When I first got here, I didn't know what that meant. You know, I didn't know what any of this meant. And Marcus was here from the second my AA journey started. He was the first person that talked to me in this room when I came through that door on the very first day. And I will always tell this story. I walked through that door and I was thinking about leaving. You know, I was still shaken, still sweaty. And Marcus did his, "Hey, how's it going?" He's like, "Hey, come here." And he introduced himself to me and I was like, "Okay, I guess this is okay. I guess I could probably like stay in here for a little bit." And so I did. I stayed in here. And then, you know, I came back again. And I came back again. And I came back again. And I didn't think any of what has happened to me would have happened by coming into this room. And I didn't grow up in an alcoholic household. My household was, I don't really know what normal is, but I feel like it was normal. Like my parents growing up, they weren't drunk or anything in front of me. I had an alcoholic step-grandma that would like keep her vodka in her big gulp. But that was like about like the most traumatic thing, I guess, that could happen to me as far as alcohol goes when I'm little. I still remember her like breathing on me and I didn't know what that smell was. And like once I got older and got like hammered for the first time, I was like, "Oh, that's what Mare Mare was drinking." But I digress, sorry. But yeah, I mean, I didn't have anything that was really out of the ordinary. You know, I had a normal family. I had a normal upbringing. The only thing that really started to get me when I was little was I just had horrific anxiety, like horrific anxiety. I don't know why. I don't know where it came from, but it was really bad. And my parents, I remember it got to the point where, I mean, I was losing weight. I looked like pretty emaciated and people were like, "Are you feeding your child?" Like kind of like questioning my parents. And man, it just got to the point where I was not functioning. I was getting sick. I couldn't go to school. And it was just one of those hard times. And I don't really think I've ever met another child who was anxious in the way that I was. And I ended up going into high school. And once I got my driver's license, I remember I was able to be mobile. And that was like a little bit of a relief because I wasn't stuck anywhere. And just being mobile really helped me. And I feel like that was like kind of my first reprieve of being a little less anxious. Because, I mean, I was always pent up. Always pent up. I feel like I probably took a number of years off my life just like living through my childhood. But yeah, things got a little bit better. Mom and dad would drink in front of me at that point. I drank a little bit at home. They didn't even really care. I mean, I remember one time I got home, I think I was 17. And I got home from tennis practice and I was just beat. I was tired. I was thirsty for a beer. And I went and I asked my mom, I was like, can I have a beer? And she's like, get a beer. Don't be weird. Don't be weird about it. And so, I mean, I remember the way that that first like whole beer made me feel. And it wasn't really a buzz, but it was a little bit of a lighter feeling, you know, and that feeling that we like. And I got into Fresno State when I was 18. I went straight from high school and went into Fresno State. And I joined a fraternity. And I started going to fraternity parties. And I remember the first time I got really hammered at one of those fraternity parties, I was like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'm going to keep doing it as much as I can. And so I went and joined a fraternity. And once I got going in the fraternity, especially once I turned 21, I would say once I turned 21 and I could buy it, things started to get a little out of control, like fairly quickly. And I remember also being at one of those frat parties. These are just kind of like signs looking back that I've thought about. But I ran into one of my friends from high school. Her name was Sam. And I ran into her at this fraternity party. And guys can never really get drinks at fraternity parties, but girls can get drinks like from the house. I feel like it's really easy for a girl to walk up and be like, can I have a beer? And they'll get a beer. And so Sam, this girl I knew from high school, she had an extra beer in her hand. And she's like, you want this? Like, someone just gave this to me. I already have a drink. And so I drank it. And I don't remember anything after that. I got roofied. And I don't remember how I got home. I don't remember anything. And I was like, there's no way I blacked out like from one beer, you know, because I don't even think I had started drinking yet. And I remember waking up the next day and thinking it was fun. And that's not normal. That's not a normal thing. I blacked out and I was like, dang, I got roofied. That's crazy. It's like, that's like one of the most wild things ever. Like, let's do it again. And people sent me pictures. They're like, what happened to you? And I'm like, got roofied, I guess. You know, guess it happens. It's not just the movies. But yeah, so that happened. And like, these are just like warning signs. And then I remember my fraternity. This guy was like, hey, I need to talk to you. And he was like on the board in the fraternity. And he was like, so, you know, a lot of us have been talking and like, we think you probably have a drinking problem. And I was like, you have the drinking problem. Like, you don't drink enough. And I'm like, that's your problem, not mine. And so I looking back at these things and I'm just like, that's crazy. If like a fraternity is telling me that I drink too much, that's too much. That's way too much. So, yeah, there were signs, like, definitely signs looking back. I remember when I got here, I was just like, I just drank a little too much. Like, you don't end up here from drinking a little too much, I can tell you that right now. Not for me anyways, from personal experience. Anyways, things started to go, I would say, by the time I was a year into being 21, things started to go downhill, you know, like my grades were dropping. I was really involved in school. Man, I was on the student body whatever it is. I was really involved. It was called ASI, Associated Students, and you had to be elected to get into this. And it was like a big deal to me at the time. And I was like super, like, and I was like, I can't believe like people actually voted for me and I'm like doing this thing. This is cool. And I served on this board for a year. And the next year I was just so far into it. I remember getting a letter in the mail when they still mailed things and left messages on answering machines. And getting a message on an answering machine that was like, hey, we got to talk to you. Like, you're on academic probation now. Like, you can't be on the board anymore. And I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, uh-oh. Like, that's not good. But I was like, doesn't everybody go through this, you know? Like, everybody just, like, their grades drop. But, yeah, I was in denial for sure. I didn't really realize. I was just so deep into it at that point. I had, my alcoholism had progressed alarmingly, like in a 1 year span. And I remember I went home and went to my parents' house, and I hadn't been there in a couple months. And I'm like, walked in, and my mom's like looking at me up and down, just like, I just remember this look of concern on her face when she saw me. And I guess like my appearance really had like changed from like the last time she saw me. I looked like shit, I'm sure. I felt like shit all the time, that's for sure. And things just started to get a little grim, you know. And there was this one point I remember when I woke up this one morning and I started to try and get ready for class, and I was just like, I can't go. Like, I can't even drive right now. Like, I'm still hammered from the night before. And I looked on the counter, and this is when I really realized, like, I'm a real alcoholic. And I saw a bottle or a handle of vodka that was full. I bought it the night before, and there was that much left in it. I had drank almost a whole handle the day before, which is just crazy. I can't even believe I'm alive, to be honest. So, I mean, it had progressed just alarmingly. And so you could probably predict what happened, you know, after that. I got kicked out of school. Actually, I dropped out before I could get kicked out. I didn't want to have my ego tarnished, you know. So I left school. It wasn't for me at that time, you know. But no, in reality, I was getting kicked out. I was on academic probation. I was failing all my classes. I had D's. I had an F. I'd never gotten an F in my life before. I got an F, I remember. So then I drop out. I drop out and started working in a wine bar where I could get alcohol while I'm at work. It is the perfect place for somebody like me. And so I would pretty much drink at least a bottle of wine while I was at work, for like an evening shift. And pretty soon after that, I ended up in rehab. My parents were like, you are not well. And I'm like, no, I'm not well. And I was like, I don't really know what to do, to be honest. And so I agreed to go to rehab, and they woke me up the next morning. And I already had a bag packed for me. I didn't even see them pack one. And they had a bag packed. And then I was like, you know, I think I'm good. I think I'm all right. I don't need this, you know. We're good. It's just a false alarm, you know. And so they threw me in the car, drove me down to Southern California and dropped me off. And I went to rehab, and I stayed there for approximately 6 days. And I checked myself out. But I heard some stuff while I was there. I went to some meetings. I didn't really know what I was reading, you know, but I still remember hearing a couple things. I remember hearing Keep Coming Back, and all of our slogans that I used to hear and just be like, why are you saying that? And anyways, so I go down to Southern California. I'm in this rehab place. I check out. I'm actually sober at this point. Like, I kind of stopped shaking. I was there long enough to probably detox, and they had me on all these, probably Valium or something. So I went back to my parents. No, I had a little apartment. I'm like actually forgetting about this. Went back to my little apartment, and I just knew I couldn't do what I was doing anymore. And there was something else that had really been bothering me. And it still crops up every now and again these days, but it's not something that I have to drink over anymore. And I was still closeted when I was living down there at that time. And I had not come out as a gay man. And that was just something that was eating me from the inside out. It was horrible. It was not a way to live for me anyways, and I knew I needed to leave. So I moved. I moved up to the Bay Area, surprise. Moved up to... I moved up where, I guess, where any gay person would think to move. And I moved up to the Bay Area, and I started working up there. And, you know, I still wasn't drinking, though. I was still sober. I wasn't drinking or doing any drugs. And, you know, things really started to come together. I didn't have this. I didn't know. I still didn't have any sort of foundation. I still didn't have any defense. I didn't have any defense against anything. I still didn't really have any coping mechanisms. Didn't know what faith was, you know. Didn't know how to replace fear with faith at that point. And I ended up actually finishing school up there too. I mean, things, I kind of like kicked it up into high gear. I finished school. I started working. I remember I started waiting tables at this restaurant, and Marcus was a patron of that place. But anyways, I remember like something in me was just like, you shouldn't drink, you know, like this isn't good for you. Like you're doing really well. And they were having like tastings, and like they wanted me to taste the wine so I could sell it at the restaurant, and I didn't. And I was just like, I can't do that. And they're like, why not? And I was like, I just can't. And so I started to make friends, you know, I started to make friends up there and kind of build a little life and got a good friend group, got a good job, started working at Porsche in Mill Valley. And I'm a big fan of cars. And so that was just kind of like a dream for me. And, but with those friends and everything, it came like, you know, why don't you just have one? Why don't you just have one with us? It's fine. No one's not going to hurt you. And you know, I didn't have any defense. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I kind of had an idea for sure, but I didn't know what it meant to be an alcoholic. I didn't know what the progression was. I didn't know anything about any of that. And so I didn't know how dangerous that was. And I think it was like my 27th birthday, and I'm in San Francisco. I'm out at this nice restaurant with my friend for my birthday. And he bought me a glass of champagne without telling me. And it comes to the table. And I drank it. And I thought, you know, that's cool. Like, I'm cool. And I remember that feeling when it went down. And I remember feeling a little giddy at the dinner table. And I was like, I'm fine. Like, I waited this out. Like, I've learned from my actions. I think I can responsibly drink again, you know? We try every which way to justify our drinking. And so I drank. I had that glass of champagne, and then I said, I think we should have one more. And so I actually had two glasses of champagne. But the following weekend, I told my friend Brett, who had consistently, like, asked me to drink with him over and over and over, and I was like, I had a glass of champagne, and he was like, come over now. And then it was just kind of on, and started hanging out with different people. You know, I started hanging out at bars again, and it was fun for a brief time. I like had this weird glimpse of fun and drinking without any repercussions, drinking without hangovers. And I can see why people do it. Like if you're a normie, yeah, that's fun. Kind of cool. You can go to a bar and you can have a drink or two and you can go to work the next morning. It's pretty crazy. But I'm not one of those people. And you know, it snuck up again, and I found myself, I remember I was in a grocery store. I was getting stuff to make dinner. And I thought, you know, that'd be nice to have a glass of wine with dinner. And at first I was just like, you know, I'm just going to drink with people. I'm going to drink at social occasions, and that's going to be fine. And then I started drinking by myself again. Soon I was drinking a bottle again at night. Soon I was drinking two bottles. Soon I was drinking three. I drank three bottles of wine nightly. It was insane. My gosh. Anyways, so much money too. I can't even like... Anyways. So, started to progress again. COVID hit. We had the fires up north. My best friend's house burnt down. He moved away. My friend group just kind of disbanded. Everything was weird. My work was weird. We were wearing masks. I didn't know if I was going to be working that day. And then I started showing up to work hammered. And they were like, you got to go, buddy. And I was like, oh, dang. There goes my like precious job that was so precious to me at one time. And that didn't stop me, you know? I lost a job that I treasured. I went to 4 interviews for that job. I had never had any sort of job that took 4 interviews to get. And that was a big, like, ask me back then and I was just like, oh, no, I didn't want to work there anyways. But that hurt, you know? That was something that really hurt, like, when that happened. So anyways, that happened. I'm jobless. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? What did I do last time all this happened? I moved. So I moved to the Central Coast and I said, it's going to be better. And so moved here and I'm just drinking and drinking and drinking. Mind you, I was in a car accident too. I don't want to say I was under the influence, but I was still a little hazy from the day before, but I hadn't drank yet that day. And I was in a pretty bad car accident. And I remember that car accident came with a pretty good settlement. And I didn't need to work. I had money in my bank account to drink. And that's a dangerous place for somebody like me. And it just turned to drinking all day, all night. My parents were just like, they didn't know what to do. And so I like went and sobered up at their house. And I remember it took me a solid month. I had damaged my body. I should have been in the hospital for sure. I could hardly get up. I could hardly do anything. I could get up for maybe 2 or 3 minutes at a time and I would have to go lay back down. I had no energy, nothing. Like it was really, really bad. Like my body was really sick and recovered from that, kind of recuperated, got another job and what do? I go drink again. You know, same thing happened over and over and over. I could not stay sober. And then I went up north again to a good friend got married and I drove up to Marin County and went to a wedding and I got myself a DUI on my way home from the wedding. And that comes with all the fun stuff. If you've ever had one, I got a lawyer. That I remember getting the lawyer and I was like, it wasn't my fault. There's no way I blew a .25. Like that's just some BS right there. But yeah, I blew a .25 and I was driving down 101. How selfish am I? You know, that's like one of the most selfish things. I don't know. Looking back, we don't dwell on it, just like it says in here. But I remember once I started to get sober, that was something that really bothered me. And anyways, I ended up getting a DUI and I started talking to the lawyer and I remember he called me I remember at one point looking at my phone and I saw a call from him, but it was the day before and I don't remember him texting me or I don't remember talking to him on the phone at all. And so soon after I saw that text message, the call, and it was a 5-minute long call. I talked to him for 5 minutes and I don't remember anything. And he calls me and he like I said, it was like pretty soon after I had discovered that and was like, uh-oh. And so my phone rings and it's him. And I answered it. And he was like, what the fuck? Blah, blah. He was so mad at me. And he was like, you want me to represent you? You piece of shit. Blah, blah, blah. He's like, you need to get your ass to an AA meeting now. And I was like, okay. And so the next day, he was like, did you go to a meeting? I was like, yeah. I went to one online. And he was like, no. He was like, I want a court card signed tomorrow for an AA meeting. And I came here. I really still wasn't going to actually stay here. You know, I was so scared. I was still sick. I was so sick. I was shaky. I was sweating. And it was just an awful time. And I walked in here and I was welcomed by somebody in AA. And my life started to change after that. My sponsor, that was my first meeting. And then the next week I was at another meeting, and I remember this guy sitting in front of me, and I was just still so out of it because I hadn't drank anything. I was still sober from that Christmas day that had happened. And I remember this guy standing up in front of me, and the meeting ended, and he turns around and he's holding a baby. And I was like, yeah, the baby the whole time. I was just like, just remember being so out of it. And then he turns around and he introduced himself to me. And he's like, hey, like, how's it going? He's like, you have a sponsor? And I was like, I don't know what that is. And he's like, I'm going to be your sponsor. Like, you need that. And so I started working with him. And, you know, I didn't know what this was. I didn't know what the steps were. I knew there were 12 of them. I didn't know what a tradition was. And I started working these steps with him. And things after that didn't seem to, they weren't so bad, you know. I mean, the first month physically was really hard. It took me a whole month to start feeling better again because I had just absolutely annihilated my body. I'm taking physiology, and now I know what I actually did to my body, and it's not good. Anyways, so I started working the steps. Things started to get a little bit better, and pretty soon, like 2 months go by, and I'm getting a little bit better. Soon after that, I'm like interviewing for another job, and I get a job. I'm like, this is crazy. I got a job. After I got a DUI and ruined my life. And there is also one thing I'm going to double back. Right after I got my DUI, I made the decision just before Christmas. It might have been Christmas Eve. Maybe it was the day before. It was right around that time. But I was in my house. I was hammered. I couldn't even drink anymore. I was throwing it up when I would try and drink. I would, especially in the morning, just try and get like a few gulps down, and then it would kind of start to make me level out a little bit, probably throw it up. But that, I remember that night I made the decision to end my life. And it was a serious thing. It was just like, this is something I know that I'm going to do. And I think the world's going to probably be a lot better without me. Selfish, self-centered. I even wrote letters. You know, I wrote letters to my family, and how sad, you know. And I remember my mom calling me, and she wouldn't really say a lot. She would call me around leading up to those times, and she was calling me to see if I was alive. And so I tried to call her every day, you know, as part of a living amends. I mean, I've never told her, like, but I try to make it a point to give her a call, you know, for all those days that she called me and she was wondering if I was alive, wondering if I killed myself, or wondering if I had drowned myself in alcohol. So that was a rough time. And looking back on everything that's happened in the last 3 years, I'm so glad that I didn't do that. You know, life got better. I found AA. I found everybody in this room, you know. I found a God. I found a higher power. I got baptized. I never thought I would ever get baptized, you know? I started developing a morning routine. I started having conscious contact with a higher power. And it became something that I started to rely on, you know? Like, we go through all these steps, we do all these things, and if you're new, you might not know why you're doing them. And they didn't really click, you know? I mean, I worked them. Even when I fully worked the steps, I feel like I didn't totally understand the 12 steps. And, you know, you start to do these things, you start to live a certain way, and these things start to make sense. I heard people talking about their conscious contact with their higher power, and I didn't, honest to God, I didn't know what that meant. And I started with that morning routine. I would get up and I would pray, and even if I didn't know what I was praying about, I still did it. You know, do I do it every day now? No. I try to keep in that habit, but if I hadn't done that, you know, it's like anything that we do, any sort of exercise, you get your repetition. You know, you get your reps in, and you build that skill or whatever you're doing. And it's just like anything else that you would do, for me anyways, from my personal experience. And I kept doing it. And then soon it turned into something that I was doing without thinking about. You know, something happens throughout the day. And I'm like, God, help me with this. You know, take this away from me. Take this anger away from me. Take this fear away. You know, I started to learn how to turn fear into faith. And it was within my second year of sobriety that I started to, you know, I started to get interests again. Like, things interested me. I don't think anything really interested me except for staying alive, like, for a while, you know. And these things start to creep back up in your life. Creep up in a good way. I feel like creep is a bad word. But, things start to... Interests start to come back, you know. I mean, I started playing the piano again. I played the piano for years and years and years. And I started playing again. And it started to be something that I really enjoyed. And I started to develop an interest in finding a new career path, you know. I had so many interviews. I thought I wanted to be a 911 dispatcher, or I thought I might want to be a nurse, but I didn't know which one, you know? I didn't know what to do. And I started reading the bottom of page 420. And it says, acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. I never sit and do nothing while watching for him to tell me, oops, sorry. I never just sit and do nothing while waiting for him to tell me what to do. Rather, I do whatever is in front of me to be done, and I leave the results up to him. However that turns out, that's God's will for me. And I remember I read that, and I said, this is what I'm going to do. Because I was just losing my mind over, like, what to do and these interviews I was having, and... You know, they weren't going well. I had some interviews that went really bad. I had somebody ask me 3 questions, and they had this thing open. And after the 3rd question, they said, all right, thanks for coming. And I said, well, okay, that didn't go well. And so I left, and, you know, like, before AA, like, I wouldn't be able to get through stuff like that. That's not, like, a crazy thing, but I always would shut down. I would always shut down. And pretty soon, I decided to become a CNA, and all the 911 dispatch doors closed, all the healthcare doors opened, and I knew that was God, where God wanted me to be. And they really did, like, it's actually incredible. Like, I can't even describe to you. Like, this is the first time I put my faith into God fully. You know, I mean, I worked the steps, but I didn't know, like, I didn't know that that's what this is, you know, and that's something that I did. And that was the first time I was just like, I don't have this. I don't have a hold on any of this, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And so I passed all my tests. I became a CNA. I started working in healthcare. And I started having all these incredible experiences. I walked into a room once, and this guy had just been admitted. And I walked in, and I was getting him situated. And as soon as he laid eyes on me, he said, "Are you a friend of Bill?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And just like stuff like that. How do you make this stuff up? Like, it's incredible. I started talking to him, and he was just like, "I knew as soon as I saw you." And I don't know. It's just, some of this stuff is just crazy. And, you know, we can always, like, once you start talking to somebody, I feel like you can tell, you know. And I've been asked numerous times by patients at work, and, you know, soon I'm, like, going into patients' rooms, and I'm reading them the reflection in the morning. Because he can't. You know, he can't even open his phone. I'm reading out of the big book to somebody at work. Like, how incredible is that? You know, I just suited up and I showed up every single day. You know, I didn't know if healthcare was going to work out for me, but I pray to God every time I walk in there, pray for God to watch over me, to watch over these people. And it's been incredible so far. And I have been just, I didn't think I could do the school. You know, I didn't think I could get through these classes, and I'm getting through these classes. And I got accepted into a competitive nursing program. And I just look back and I can't believe it, you know, a drunk like me, they let a drunk like me into nursing school. And I just think that's one of the most incredible things ever, you know. I'm just a raging alcoholic. But I just happen to have a reprieve that I can dig into every day, you know? I mean, somebody who has cancer, like, how much would they give to be able to go into remission every single day? Like, and that's something I take for granted sometimes, you know? I have this cure, this daily reprieve in front of me. And I try to practice progress and, you know, stay into this even on my really busy days, because without AA, I don't have anything. And also without my higher power, I feel like they're intertwined for me. You know, I can't have one without the other. And I'm just so grateful for this program. I'm so grateful for everybody who has been a part of my recovery. Grateful for everybody in this room. And I do want to ask a volunteer to read the promises, if that's possible. Close us out in the promises. Okay. You want to? Yeah.
You got a written door for that? Oh, no. I don't have the confession.
Okay. Sorry. It's on page 80, right here. If somebody wants to read it, I think it's on 83 at the bottom.
I can read.
Do it.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
Let's give this guy another round.